When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that heals and energizes the body while soothes the mind. Transforming the leaf requires a fusion of artistry, craftsmanship, and commerce. The tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts a global influence, generating $260 billion in sales and employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. A Scotland tea fraud trial ends in a unanimous conviction. India tea exports resume as the Israeli-Iran ceasefire holds. And will tea thrive in lunar and Martian soil? Plus, translating brand passion into profits. Founders often create tea products out of deep personal passion. They believe if they love it, others will too. But translating that belief into a message that resonates is challenging. Success starts with knowing your product meets a real need, then communicating not just what it is, but how it makes people feel. Emotion matters, says our guest this week, food and beverage consultant Debbie Wildrick. She explains that sampling helps, but it's slow and costly. The key to establishing a successful tea brand lies in authentic storytelling, clear messaging, and fostering an emotional connection. That's how you turn passion into awareness and awareness into loyal customers. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
Con man Thomas Robinson was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for defrauding buyers of over 550,000 British pounds for tea he claimed was grown in Scotland. The scheme relied on tea supposedly produced from plants at a Perthshire farm, which allegedly yielded thousands of kilograms of tea. The tea leaves were thin and few, mixed with a ton of imports. Marketed as the Wee Tea Plantation, the line included Dalroch White, a smoked white tea, Silver Needles, Highland Green, and an unusual tea made from stems that he called Scottish Antlers. Robinson started selling the tea as a single estate product at high prices, supplying 5-star hotels in the UK and the EU. Demand far outpaced production, so he negotiated with local smallholders and an Italian grower to import plants at a rate of 3 euros each. It was later revealed he also bought tea from Sri Lanka, Malawi, and China through a London dealer. Using the alias Thomas O'Brien, Robinson, 55, planted thin samplings on a former sheep ranch near Loch Tay. He claimed the sheathing for the tea trees was developed to replant trees in the Amazon rainforest. The sheath protected the soft bark from the weather and accelerated growth, he said. The plants, however, soon perished. Marketing materials, including press releases, described his products as, quote, Scottish-grown tea that comes from gardens in our farming heartlands in Perthshire, Dumfries, and Galloway, end quote. Prosecutors called his claims, quote, the CV of a fanaticist. In addition to the tea, Robinson operated a nursery selling 22,000 plants to other growers at £12.5 each. His story began to unravel in 2017 after the Perth and Kinross Council found the farm did not have a food processing license. In 2020, the Scottish Food Crime and Incidents Unit, a government-run consumer protection group, after months of investigation, began submitting evidence to prosecutors. The court heard the case over a period of 3 weeks. The jury verdict was unanimous. The Wall Street Journal titled its article, The Great Scottish Tea Swindle. The newspaper wrote that, quote, oddly, Robinson's the godfather of the Scottish tea industry, said Isley Henderson, who had been growing tea on the hilly banks of a Scottish loch for 7 years and is now producing enough to sell to high-end restaurants. Quote, he sparked people's interest in it, end quote. Scotland is now home to 30 commercial tea gardens. Due to escalating tensions in the Middle East, India, one of Iran's top tea suppliers, suspended exports last week, causing significant bottlenecks at the Kolkata port. A 12-day exchange of missiles, bombing runs, and drone attacks led to the disruption of tea auctions in Kolkata and Guwahati. Traders reported a 10% decline in sales of orthodox tea, a preference among Iranian tea drinkers. The war has stranded consignments, led to canceled departures, and created a deep uncertainty. Buyers were relieved as limited trade resumed this week. Iran purchases about $40 million, that's 150 Qarari, of tea annually at prices ranging from 300 to 325 rupees per kilogram. Iran imported approximately 35 million kilos of Indian tea last year, which is about one quarter of the 120 to 130 million kilograms India produces annually. Anshuman Kanoria, chairman of the Indian Tea Exporters Association, told the Asian News Network that, quote, with the ceasefire, tea traders have returned to the auction centers and are shifting their focus back to orthodox tea from CTC, end quote. The shipping hazards due to missile attacks in the Red Sea forced tea suppliers to avoid the Suez Canal since November of 2023. Closure of shipping lanes through the Straits of Hormuz would have profound implications for the global tea supply chain. The International Tea Trade reports that India experienced a 15.5% increase in the value of its tea exports last year compared to 2023, making India the world's fastest-growing tea exporter. The situation is quite different this year as India-Pakistan border tensions disrupted demand from Pakistan, which primarily buys South Indian tea. Production is steady, but a slowing global economy and geopolitical unrest in Russia, Ukraine, Pakistan, and now the Middle East have depressed prices since April. Bought leaf factories paid an average of 14.5 rupees per kilogram for green leaf in May. Prices are likely to fall further in June, according to projections from the Tea Board of India. British scientists are growing tea in simulated lunar and Martian soil to demonstrate how colonists in space may one day harvest their daily cup of tea. Researchers at the University of Kent, in collaboration with Dartmoor Tea, are cultivating the tea plants under extreme conditions representative of a regolith terroir. The study's results, due in September, are part of a shift in space exploration, moving beyond simply exploring other worlds to considering how humans can live and thrive there. The BBC reports that 12 young saplings will be carefully monitored by aerospace engineers for 30 days at temperatures, humidity, and lighting controlled to mimic conditions in space. Professor Nigel Mason told the BBC, quote, the fun part of the project is to see whether we could grow things on the moon, but a lot of the basic work is also about how crops and plants survive harsh environments and poor soils are a big problem with climate change, end quote. Food has previously been grown in space without gravity using specially treated water. The 2011 experiment conducted by Italian and American scientists on the International Space Station was a success. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Founders often create tea products out of deep personal passion. They believe if they love it, others will too. But translating that belief into a message that resonates is challenging. Success starts with knowing your product meets a real need, and then communicating not just what it is, but how it makes people feel. Emotions matter, says food and beverage consultant Debbie Wildrick, our guest this week. She explains that sampling helps, but it's slow and costly. The key to establishing a successful tea brand is authentic storytelling, clear messaging, and emotional connection. That's how you turn passion into awareness and awareness into loyal customers. Debbie Wildrick has over 30 years of leadership and experience in sales, marketing, operations, and channel strategy within the consumer packaged goods industry. A recognized expert in brand building and distribution, she specializes in helping entrepreneurs scale through strategic growth. Debbie spent 6 years as chief strategy officer and co-founder of MetaBrand and now leads her own consulting firm. Her executive background includes roles as president of the beverage division at Frey Farms, executive vice president at Hemp Fusion, and CEO of Bozzi, a Colorado-based nutritional beverage company. She began her career in marketing after earning a degree from the University of Texas at Dallas and previously served as senior director of Vault and Proprietary Beverages at 7-Eleven. Thanks so much for joining us on the program, Debbie. I follow your work and appreciate that you're taking the time to help tea farmers learn the basics.
Hi, Dan.
Consumer interest in tea increased during the COVID-19 pandemic, a period when producers were temporarily unable to harvest or process tea and faced a sharp decline in food service demand. As a result, several tea companies adopted a direct-to-consumer approach. One of the most successful is Lakshmi Tea Estates, a $200 million India-based producer founded in 1912. Lakshmi produces more than 30 million kilos annually from 21 holdings in Africa, Assam, Tripura, and West Bengal. CEO Rudra Chatterjee first explored digital direct sales within India in 2021 before launching a U.S. product line that now generates approximately $3 million a year selling tea globally on Amazon Marketplace. Looking at Lakshmi's website together, can you explain why consumers find a direct appeal so attractive?
We've begun to talk about this a lot over the years. Today's consumer and what they really are looking for and what I always said, what drives them to buy, right? It's not just about the consumption the first time around, but it's buying again and again and consuming again and again. You know, we're very much a society that responds to the emotional element of a product. We have to find that link in our marketing and branding that is that emotional link. And, you know, he's doing it with certainly the pictures and the description of the slopes that he's buying it on. The biodynamic estate produces a rare cosmic tea, you know, using words that are important to that consumer that's looking for that emotional link. And then the other thing is the experiential link. You know, I was talking to my husband about this. He's born and raised in Kenya and then spent most of his adult life in London. And then has been traveling around a lot for the last 5 or 6 years. You know, he's very, very particular about his tea, but he's also very much a coffee snob too. So we only use the French press. And where I'm getting at is that whether it's an experience, it's an event, doing tea and especially from a loose leaf perspective and it requiring a little bit additional equipment. And we're very much consumers that want to really, truly experience our food and beverage and really make a big deal out of the event.
How does someone who's truly skilled at growing something and capable of making delicious products go about sharing their secret with the rest of the world? They want us to know about this amazing stuff so that people can order it.
Really, really great question, because as an entrepreneur, we actually believe that we have created something amazing. A lot of times as an entrepreneur, the reason that we create something is because we believe that it is not available out there, but that there is definitely a consumer need, because I want it so much and I believe in it so much that I believe that everyone else will. And so it's very, very difficult to communicate that passion, that drive that leads us to really create and make this magnificent product. And on top of that, we only really have the real estate of the bottle. Social media has become very much a great marketing tool. But you know what? If you don't have any followers, then how can you communicate via social media? It really starts with understanding that you really do have a product that the consumer wants, and then messaging in a way that communicates not only your passion, but the emotional aspect of that product and what you really feel like when you consume it. And that's all really got to be done by word of mouth and building on that and building your followers. And certainly sampling has become over the years a huge way to get your product in front of consumers, but it's very difficult and very costly at the same time. So it's a slow build and a combination of using the right wording, including the passion and the emotional aspects of why you built the product and what it means to consume it. And then, you know, beginning very slowly and making sure that you're able to build your followers that way.
There are an infinite number of markets and niches. The question I want to ask is, how do I find a consumer who wants my tea? I agree that passion is fundamental to success. You've got to believe in your product. But how do you find that market? And how do you define it? Because it's too broad to appeal to everyone all the time, everywhere.
Yeah, there's too many players, right? Many categories are like this. But when you have that, how do you find the consumer that wants your product? And we're talking about small farmers, we're talking about farmers all over the world. It's watching the people that are closest to you and understanding why they like your product and what makes them consume it, and understanding that from your original consumers that have been already, you know, consuming your product, then you can more easily find the consumer that's going to be interested in your product, because you've already done your little mini research and you're constantly doing that. And I think that one of the easiest ways to really do that research that we may not even think about is asking your people, why do you like mine? Why do you consume mine? What makes a difference to you? Do you like to consume my tea and other teas? Do you consume mine exclusively? How does it make you feel? And asking the questions about your existing consumers can help you then find and lead you to consumers that aren't yours yet.
Brands act like a spotlight, right? A successful brand in a market shows that the market has potential. But even if your brand doesn't succeed there, you should still give it a try.
You know, I talk a lot about this when you're building your strategy with regard to retail launch. So in order to pick the launch market, there's a couple of factors that are really important. One is picking a launch market that has a much higher consumption of tea than the neighboring market or a market in another part of the country. You know, you're looking at, and I've done this for several brands with regard to full-blown business plans. I did a lot for premium water. And it's really looking at the market share of the consumption habits of particular markets, the size of the markets, and going into those as early launches because you want to establish your influencers, and those influencers will then begin to spread the word around, and then you can expand into other markets. But going where it is easiest to penetrate because there's a big understanding, and Matcha Brooklyn was one of the biggest beginning markets for matcha. So bringing up matcha and you've got not only shops opening up, but you've got, you know, brands putting it into packaged products and then launching in the right areas. You're going to have a better chance of being successful because you're launching in the place that best gives you the opportunity to build, and then building from there because you built your influencer base, and that becomes your word of mouth.
Usually you seek out an export market after you firmly establish demand in a local market and built your brand name. Discuss the risk of being too insular and not innovative, as this can lead to satisfying the needs of locals without expanding into new markets. Bottom line, when you enter a new market, you learn new things.
Yes, you absolutely do. Reaching into new markets and being innovative is still about finding those markets that give you more of an opportunity to succeed versus others. And that starts with linking yourself to markets that are similar to yours, but don't sell myself short of opportunities when I have the ability to go out and expand. We just want to really understand our home market and how what other markets can align more quickly with that market so that we have a better chance of success in those markets. But staying within our home market gives us no opportunity at all to really grow our business and scale our business and be able to take it into other parts of the world.
You're a consultant with an impressive resume and extensive experience. What's the most common challenge clients bring to you?
Oh, gosh. One of my biggest hot points is, tell me whether or not you think my product is differentiated. The number one question, the market opportunity and the whether or not my product is differentiated enough to be successful should be their number one question. But many times, the biggest thing that they want to know about is how do I get into distribution? That's the number one question. Maybe they haven't even formulated their product yet. I like to call it the viable business model because it's really about understanding before you do anything else whether or not you've got a product that you can ultimately go to market with. He happens to be very, very successful today with about $5 million in sales at retail, mostly in natural products stores. But yeah, it's interesting that we don't think about those kinds of things in the beginning and making sure that we've got a viable business model before we ever go to market.
Sage advice. Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and T-experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.